The episode you're about to listen to is a special edition of The Startup Show, recorded during Grit Daily's live event at South by Southwest. Here we have an expansive range of topics and featured experts from various industries. Enjoy.
I'm at the Lively and Grit Daily House, a Mac CNBC tech reporter, joined by Danny, CEO of Unique. Welcome.
Hey, thank you. It's good to be here.
So we are going to talk about what your company is working on in the context of the ethical considerations of human-like AI in front of consumers. And that's literally your business model. You're creating these human-like, I wanted to say avatars, but you call them digital humans.
Yeah, that's right.
Tell me about Unique. What does the business do?
Yeah, so Unique is a digital human company, but you know, not a lot of people are familiar with the term digital humans. And the reason we don't use avatar is because avatar is used in a lot of different contexts. And so when we talk about digital humans, it's really about the avatars that are high fidelity, that are AI powered, that you can talk to in real time. And so that's a digital human. That's what we do. We create for brands and enterprise brands, digital humans that can talk to their customers or talk to their employees. So they could be helping with training, onboarding, sales and marketing, and even customer support.
I mean, your list of enterprise clients is robust. It's big names. You got Qatar Airways, L'Oreal. Tell me about who else you're working with.
Yeah, I mean, we've been very fortunate. I mean, the market right now is super interested in AI, and they're looking at where AI can really add true value, right? Like, there's a lot of AI technology out there, but how do you apply AI in a way that's making, you know, a return on investment of AI? And so we've had, you know, brands like Deutsche Telekom, who own T-Mobile, and they've been working with us first on helping customers who come onto the website and have to deal with all these technical terms, right? Like, not everyone knows what a gigabyte is or how many wireless access points you need in your home. And so instead of like just giving them information and they have to search and figure it out, they have a digital human who can talk to them in a normal human way and say, hey, just tell me about your family situation. What are you trying to do? They'll talk about streaming. They might talk about gaming. And from there, the digital human provides recommendations and they can then click to buy. And through that, they increase conversion, happier customers. And now that digital human is even doing the customer support and the onboarding.
Yeah.
So it's pretty cool how it's been used.
And so we were testing this out before we started this conversation. And it's cool because like with Qatar Airways, for example, it was like I was talking to a flight attendant and you could ask, do you have gluten-free meals on board? And it does kind of feel like a more conversational exchange. I'm not trying to figure out through a chatbot situation, just, you know, typing back and forth. There was something that was more conversational and easy about getting the info.
Yeah.
from someone who looks like they work for the company.
Yeah.
Okay, in terms of like what's happening under the hood. So is this running on ChatGPT or like what's the LLM tech behind it?
Yeah, so there is a huge advantage in generative AI, like ChatGPT and many other large language model products. So we can sit on top of any of those and customers determine what's the best model based on what they're trying to do. So that's really exciting because, you know, it's not a one size fits all. You can actually choose what works best for your organization. But we're the interface layer that can sit on top of that. And what's really interesting, you mentioned chatbots before, you know, the technology in chatbots was super limited before. So it wasn't just that you were typing. You might say, can I bring my Labrador on this plane, right? And chatbots used to be like programmed for the word dog, but they wouldn't have like a lexicon or whatever for Labrador, right? And so
yeah,
they'd be like, I'm sorry, I don't understand. Could you ask that in a different way? And you're like, this chatbot sucks. And so now with these large language models and our interface, you've got like this human interface that you just say, hey, like I'm a bit nervous. I've got a Labrador, you know, what's the best way to book a ticket where my Labrador's got plenty of floor space and how does that work and can I do that? And you can just ask literally that way and it gets answered.
And like this conversation is all about like the ethical considerations of putting this kind of human-like personality in front of a consumer. And what's interesting about your take on this is that you try to do this uncanny valley dynamic where it doesn't look totally like a human, but like close enough that it replicates the experience, but you're not tricking your end user. Explain to me how that works and the psychology behind it.
Yeah, that was something that we did a lot of research and development on in the early days of our tech stack. And one of the things that became really apparent was trust and an authentic connection with your audience and the brand. And the tricky part of photorealism is that, yes, it does also have risk of uncanny valley, but even more so, I think it can look so human that it's very hard to distinguish. And we started seeing a discomfort and a lack of trust. It's like, are you trying to fool me into thinking
if it looks too real, yeah. That's when people start to mistrust the brand.
And now it's getting, the technology is getting so advanced, it's getting harder and harder to some degree. So now you need to think about, well, what is the objective for your end users with this experience, and why is that so important? From what we've seen and the responsible AI that I believe we're applying here is that trust is number one fundamental to a good experience. Mm-hmm. And to develop trust, the first layer of that is that people are very clear that it's AI and that they're very clear on what it's there to do, and with a very clear around the information that they're going to share and talk about and how that's going to be used. Mm-hmm. And those three things are really where we lead when we talk about responsible AI. Then we start moving into some other areas I'm sure we'll talk about.
So we've talked about some of the companies that you're working with. Also, Dell and Kiehl's are on that list. And are there any sort of metrics that they're using to track the customer experience after integrating your interface into their workflow for customer service?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. The nice thing about what we're doing here is it's not just an experiment or a laboratory AI technology. This is in the real world with real customers. And a good example, that Deutsche Telekom one I talked about, they went out publicly and shared their success metrics this year. And the thing that blew me away was the conversion rate. So by using the digital human as opposed to just online forms or chatbots, we were able to increase conversion by 580%.
That's wild.
Yeah. And so it leads into, you know, and some of the considerations around responsible AI, why is that? And what is the influencing factors that we should still be considering around, you know, this new interface and how that affects people, right? And so what we realized was the reason it's so effective is because it can address people at an emotional level, whereas interfaces on it, websites, apps, etc., they just didn't do it to the degree that we can through a simulated human experience with conversation, emotional response, empathy, humor. These are all new things that you can now have on a website. And take an example, again, of something like Deutsche Telekom. People who are intimidated by technology, they probably have a high degree of doubt, like emotion, like self-doubt. Can I make the right choice here? I don't understand. All of a sudden, you're now addressing those emotions, turning them into confidence and trust. And when you do that, obviously they buy, and they're obviously a happy customer. But now you've got to consider, what are we doing with emotion here? What's the responsible design behind emotion?
Because like I immediately think of that movie with Scarlett Johansson. I think it's called Her. And it's like, yes, this emotional relationship that develops between artificial intelligence, robo guide of sorts, and your customer. How do you navigate that?
Yeah, I mean, it's a crazy world too, when you can start to see how people start building relationship, what they even say.
Yeah.
And how you work with that is in any design principle, even if it's a standard website UI, you think about the journeys that people take, you think about the edge cases, and you think about how you want to handle those edge cases, right? What's the policies we want to put around this to keep this on track for what it's meant for, but to also, you know, not shame people or, you know, like, you know, although there are some pretty disgusting comments and we can pretty much shut those things.
I can only imagine what your edge cases are.
So maybe that's pretty direct in those areas. But sometimes people might be like, I just want to talk about my day. And you're like, no, that's not what this is here for. But in that, you can still deal with it in a really, you know, nice human way, just like any human would do, right? It's like, hey, I'm here to do this job, and I appreciate you want to talk about these things, but that's not what I'm here for. And I think those are the kind of design principles we put into the model. So it's really, really good at handling that. And it's also really good at making sure any of the nasty stuff doesn't even make it to the model. We can block that right up front.
And how does it work with the companies? Like, take me through any one of your enterprise clients. Like, when they first come to you and say, hey, we're interested in launching this product, bringing you on board, like, how do you conceive of what that digital human will look like, what kind of experience it is for their end customer? Do you have a different set of guidelines for one company versus another? Is it like a template you use across all of your enterprise clients? Like, how does that thinking work behind the scenes?
Yeah, we certainly have a process that enables our customers to really think about how these brand ambassadors, because that's really what they're becoming, yeah, right? How they are connecting with their audience. And you can create any type of digital human. It mm-hmm. can be anything from a Geico gecko through to a Rey Skywalker.
Do you have any animals? Yeah. Is it all human so far?
No, we've done a couple, and you know, we've even done like Disney characters. I mean, it's been pretty fun doing what we do, and it's coming back to who's your audience,
yeah,
and how do you best want to connect with that audience? Sometimes it's not a one size fits all. This is the other part what I love about what we do is, well, you can start to introduce choice. So instead of thinking about one digital human, what if you got to come onto the website and you choose who you want to actually interact with for your onboarding, your training experience, your product expert? And so now you're actually giving the power back to the user.
Hmm.
And you've got all sorts of maybe ethnic backgrounds and all sorts of diversity that you can bring in to the digital humans. And we really encourage our customers to really think that way. And I've been super impressed with every single customer, how serious they take the consideration of not just their brand, but how their customers will feel in that experience and what the digital human needs to represent. Even in countries where maybe it's more male dominated, and trying to think about having a female digital human to better represent forward thinking and a better future for where their nation is going. And I just think things like that are pretty special.
Yeah. And so remind me, when did you guys launch?
We launched in 2019. So we spent about 3 years in R&D. And then we launched in 2019, spent a little time trying to make things work through COVID. And then obviously, you know, large language models entered the scene, and we were really working on that from 21, 22. And at that point, it's no looking back.
Yeah, I mean, that must have been such a game changer for your business once you had those, that ChatGPT moment when LLMs just became a part of the common lexicon for everybody. How did that change your approach to the work that you were doing? Like, did it just make it so that businesses cared a lot more about integrating your product than they did in the pre-ChatGPT days?
Yeah, I think the biggest problem first to solve was, how do we have meaningful conversations first at the infrastructure level?
Mm-hmm.
I remember talking with Sam Altman at Y Combinator when he was there, and that was his first, you know, observation. It's like, I love what you guys are doing, but someone has to solve this problem first. I didn't know that's where he was heading next, but I'm glad he really,
foreshadowed.
Yeah, he spearheaded something pretty special for us and many companies that are now building experiences off that foundation. And I think solving that conversational piece around understanding what people need, understanding context, and giving meaningful responses in a more human way, really then it became for us about the modality. It's like, well, how do we want to connect with people? Like, people connect to each other through text, but we also see each other face to face. We also, you know, listen to our voices and pick up tone. And if we can combine that in ways, particularly use cases that are far more interactive versus transactional. So what I mean by that is, if something's transactional, like if I was going to meet you at a restaurant and I just want to know you're on time, I'm not going to like do a video call. I'm going to send you a text saying, are you going to be here at 6 p.m. like we planned, right?
Mm-hmm.
But if I want to talk about a decision and I'm unclear and I know you know a lot about it, I might meet you in person or do a video call and just say, hey, this is what's going on. I'm trying to work these things through. It's more conversation. It's an interaction where I can actually feel heard and responded to. And I think that's a big part of where digital humans exist.
So we've talked about kind of having these guardrails in terms of navigating the social, like the emotional connection between these digital humans and the customer. We've talked about the aesthetics. So like having that digital human not look too human so as to like mislead the end customer. What else are you doing? Like in terms of like making sure you're towing the right ethical line here? Because I mean, like you think of digital replicas of humans, and it's like virtually synonymous with deep fakes, and like all the negative things that come from that. We're going into a banner election year with 2 billion voters heading to the polls in 50 countries, and already you're starting to see like deep fakes and robocalls with fake voices, and so that's a huge concern. Your use case is so much different, but like capitalizing on some of the same tech. So just like, I don't know. How else are you protecting against that? What keeps you up at night? Like, how are you thinking about protecting your customer?
I think for us in particular, the first area is the user's privacy, right?
Yeah.
That's such an important, because we work with enterprise brands, you know, you don't see too many black hats in that area because they're established brands. They have already protocols and policies to protect their customers, and you know, where you see the dangers of deep fake technology and what that looks like, it's like openly accessible to anyone. So we don't have to navigate that problem, but we certainly still need to navigate the responsibility of people's privacy, and then really thought leadership with our customers around transparency. So helping build into the experience a way that people can understand what's been used here, like in the conversation, and how that's to benefit them, or even that it won't even be saved afterwards, or even that it's going to be anonymized or whatever that might look like. And then the second part, I think that's super important to us, the issue that I think that comes with this type of technology is the bias of what a digital human should be and what it should look like. And so we really have invested a lot of money and time in ensuring that our customers can build a lot more diversity in their digital humans. They can even combine nationalities and blend them in a single digital human. There's some really amazing things where we've done experiments and a digital human with like multiple ethnicities blended in becomes far more appealing to a larger audience than if you are single ethnicity. And so there's some really cool things that are coming through this, and we're obviously dealing with bias at the same time.
You know, what are some of the key lessons that you've learned from the customers that you work with?
Well, I think the first big lesson for me was that this isn't just technology and it's solving like a technology problem. This is actually solving a human problem. It's solving an emotional problem. And the impact of that can be phenomenally good, right? And I think this will be our future. This won't be uncommon for us to talk to an interface that has a human face and mannerisms and feel alive and talk to us, right? I think that's just so proven to be effective. At the same time, I think the responsibilities that come with that are going to be really important. And that's where I've seen, you know, the way that we handle people, where they may not want to... where they are an edge case, you know, and they may want to, you know, really maybe use this digital human for maybe loneliness or other things that could be going on in their life. And so we've learned a lot about how people interact and getting really good at supporting people. Again, like I said, not shaming them and really helping them understand what this is for and what it's not for. And I think, you know, in future, we want to work with more companies that are actually trying to solve those problems. And so we have some really great brands that work with us who focus on wellness and even companions and the rest. And that even has a level of design that's still needed for healthy interaction. But that's been a big one. And I think the other big learning really is where this technology is most effective. You know, there is a good case for understanding where modalities are best used, right? And so what we're not saying is text is going away. Every interface is going to be a digital human. That's not what we're saying. We're saying that there are interfaces where, like this, that will have such a big impact where used in the right use cases. And we're seeing some of those now.
Last question for you. What are you doing in 6 months from now, in a year from now? Like, how are you scaling your business? And what's, like, I don't know, what's the cutting edge tech that nobody's talking about yet that you're working on in your laboratory back home at headquarters?
So one of our biggest areas of investment has been for a long time. It's a technology we call Synonym, which is like synthetic animation compressed into one word. And really what that is it's AI animation. So that when a large language model gives us text, it automatically knows how to animate the character in real time.
So cool.
With full personality. And so today it's good, but when we go to great, it means that these personalities will be full of backstory and the way that they react. Their body motion and their hand movement is all driven with AI, and that will be able to be really expressive and connect. And what we talk about is aliveness. It will just feel more alive. It doesn't have to look photoreal. It will just look really alive and be able to interact with you in a way that you go, this feels really great. Like I'm just having a really good conversation. So in the next 6 months, we're doing multiple releases in that space that I'm really excited about. And then the other thing is with AI, there's all these needs of where it needs to kind of be deployed in kiosks and AR and VR. You know, Apple Vision Pro just came out. And so we've got customers thinking about how do they bring more digital human experiences into Apple Vision Pro. So we're working on things like that, which is really exciting.
Lots to look out for. Danny, thank you so much for joining us.
And pleasure.
Thank you to Lively and Daily Grit House. Grit Daily. Here at South by Southwest 2024. Thanks, guys. I'm going to re-record that ending in case you can fix this in post. I'm really sorry I messed up the outro. I'm going to thank you again. Lots to look out for in the next few months. Thank you, Danny, for joining us.
Pleasure.
And thank you to Lively and Grit Daily House here at South by Southwest 2024.